Welcome to this week's Casterbris Podcast with a K, available on Casterbris, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the podcast with a K, and because we love you, and because you all seem to enjoy the Dimensions in Time commentary so much, probably more than you enjoyed Dimensions in Time, but I digress. James McLean, Brian Turnover, and myself, Christian Corley, are going to go through another 1990s charity Doctor Who. We are doing a commentary of The Curse of the Fatal Death. So I suggest you access the show notes. Find the link, get yourself a cup of tea, or something stronger, and sit back. We're about to start watching now. We're hitting play now. Here's a story about this. I watched this in a pub while I was working.
Really?
But yeah.
That's an interesting story. I can't wait for you to regale us with more interesting stories
well,
throughout
I was
this.
Working in a pub, and I managed to get the manager to let me watch this while I was working on a Friday night. And I was thrilled to see the Baker era titles and then this chunk from the TV movie.
Yes, it's surprising because after this they sort of avoided the TV movie with the plague,
like
didn't
the
they?
Plague, yeah, totally.
Now, this was actually a fan TARDIS, wasn't it?
It was a fan TARDIS, and the central column going so fast like that was actually a malfunction that when they were filming they just thought it was hilarious, so they said don't fix it because the fan didn't have it going up and down that fast. It was something that happened when they were on set.
And this is the time monster they're riffing here, isn't it?
Yes,
this communication between the TARDISes. Jonathan Pryce is such excellent casting as a monster.
Yes. I mean, this first part is very good for me. It's the second part that didn't really work. But the jokes here are...
Turn the picture off, I'm afraid. I can still hear you.
I mean, that just works really well.
Of course I know that.
You know, it plays on deconstructing the whole, you know, megalomaniac, tell the audience the exposition narrative. And again, we're going to get this, very embryonic version of what Moffat would do a lot in his television series
for what feels like 10 years. Certainly stretching over 20.
It's a good mockery, but again it just shows where Doctor Who was in the public consciousness. It wasn't a serious thing anymore. This sort of thing was
that establishing shot there. Never noticed that before.
Mantelpiece pop culture. I see we've got the same police box as Dimensions in Time. Same terrible, it's had a new lick of paint. Same terrible police box sign.
Julia Sawala there, who was famous for Absolutely Fabulous and Press Gang by Stephen Moffat.
Yes, that's true. And yet the most shunned and abhorred species. It's a nice set.
It is a nice set. There's a lot
nice
about the production of this, which I really enjoy.
I mean, the blue and the stone, the ready stone, just works really well together. And that sort of green front light. I just noticed there's a lot of reuse of old soundtrack.
Yes, there is. Because no one has set foot on this planet for
100 years, you thought you had escaped. Yeah, you wouldn't think he'd never been the master before. He just screams Delgado.
When you told me to meet you at Castle Tursurus. He's a very serious
like
actor,
the lighting
though,
there on
Jonathan
his face,
Price.
Too.
Yeah, that is good, yeah.
I think he would do well in this role,
I think he would
seriously.
Yeah. To the spikes of doom. I was reading, I've been reading Michael Palin's diary, and there's a section on his work on Brazil, and Jonathan Pryce is in Brazil, and he basically puts Jonathan Pryce up alongside De Niro as an actor.
Wow.
Naturally, I anticipated your journey back in time. I mean, this has got a lot of... Moffat's written this with a lot of Atkinson's legacy in mind.
I mean, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The Blackadder, Ben Elton, Curtis feel to it is very evident. So for reasonable comfort. The architect first. But this, again, as I say, is very much exactly where he goes from here on, isn't it? The time is what was later be known punnery as timey-wimey.
Yeah,
probably actually one of the first times Doctor Who really started playing this sort of, you know, excessive time travel manipulation.
Yeah, they never really did so much of the "I'm just going to pop back and fix that thing I didn't do yesterday" kind of stuff.
It happened in the books a bit, but again, this was about the same period as the books, wasn't it? So
yes, true. Well, I mean, Bill and Ted, you know, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure played on this quite heavily. This time travel riff. And there's a comedy piece as well in 1989. Or is it 88? I'm not sure. But, and again, here we have a little play on the romance thing again. Which is funny, because, I mean, there was as people who worked on that Place with a K, which no longer carries its relevance, we still chat, and there was some talk again, as per usual, on the female Doctor and all the issues there. And it just struck me back to how in the 90s here the idea of the Doctor even hugging or showing any romantic interest in a companion was, you know, shocking. You just never consider it. It was, you know, that was the limiter of the show. You wouldn't go past, you wouldn't cross that line. Peter Davison was really against that line being crossed. And yet here we are, we have this mocking this idea and playing with it as Paul McGann sort of did. And now it's just run-of-the-mill.
Well, you know, it's not even so much Davison being against that line. He was told he wasn't allowed to touch the companions because his age gap with them was too close. That people would think that there was, like, quote, hanky-panky going on in the TARDIS if he had put his arm around them or something. So it wasn't until, like, a couple of years into the role, or a year and a half or whatever, that he started to be able to do that.
More timey-wimey gags taking place on screen.
Yeah.
And a much older Master appears.
How can he be here? He just fell in the sewers. Yes, it's, he's so much older.
Because it's, I mean, do you it's think essentially it's the same gag being rerun through the first part of the episode, isn't it?
It plays on the that Stuart Lee context of taking a joke like a sign to the motorway. How far can you take it before it becomes funny, and then it stops being funny, and then it becomes funny again because you played it far too long on what after it's got boring.
Yeah.
This sort of runs on that same sort of idea: is how long can you play that same gag?
Is this the best collection of Daleks in the since the
probably 70s? Is actually, yeah. Also, don't really have that sort of amount of Daleks today.
Being unfair about to Remembrance of the Daleks, I think, but they still look impressive. Yes, for old style Daleks.
I sort of kind of feel it was a missed opportunity to have one of the Daleks fall down that chute, but.
These are fan built Daleks, aren't they? I believe they were.
Yeah. Majority of them. Doctor gives their how are things. That's very, again, Moffat era Doctor talking to the Daleks. You know, with Capaldi it was hello again, wasn't it?
I mean, this is, you know, again, it's all the criticisms I may have had of Stephen. I mean, this is very good putting humour to Doctor Who, which hasn't really ever been done successfully before this.
Not really,
in a sort of contemporary way. Maybe
not in a sort of doing it properly sort of a way.
Yes.
No, I mean, they're playing it straight on the whole.
Exactly.
It's not like Fenton Saunders or Lenny Henry or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or Victoria Wood.
But at the same time, like, I don't view this in the same vein that I view Dimensions and Time, for instance, where I view that as part of the show. This is definitely a parody, you know, of what it is. Like, this is, and unfortunately, a lot of these kind of parodies and jokes made it in the Moffat's era, which is probably why that era feels like a parody and a joke at times to me.
I mean, this is a... Yeah, it's almost like a commentary, isn't it, on those elements of Doctor Who.
We're doing a commentary about a commentary.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
We're deconstructing a deconstruction of what Doctor Who's about.
But like you were saying with the Dimensions and Time commentary, how you believe they were treating it real and John Nathan Turner wanted an actual production code for it, etc., supposedly with this, I shouldn't say supposedly because I've seen interviews with it, but Ian Levine says that when they were working on this and he was brought in again, or however he worked as a consultant, whatever, he said that they very much were treating this as if Rowan Atkinson was the Ninth Doctor. This was a direct continuation. He for some reason believes that this was true 100% continuation of Doctor Who and not a parody. And I just don't see that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just don't see it, and I don't see anybody actually believing that either. You know, it's strange.
Well, I didn't see Rowan Atkinson knocking down the door at the BBC saying, "Why aren't I the Doctor?"
So, given that exterminating,
or indeed anyone else who was in this,
sensible thing to do.
Right.
Why do they always change their minds at the last moment?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose you could say, I mean, as you said, Christian, there's a lot of the sort of deconstructional elements of Doctor Who in this, which became part of the new wave of Doctor Who in the 2000s, especially Moffat.
Sorry, you threw it.
The titty gag got you, did it?
Yes, I know.
I mean, it's quite a good idea. It works. I mean, it's kind of scary because, you know, fan jokes tend to be terrible. And I suppose you could say it's a testament to Moffat as a writer, where he's able to take sort of what are silly fan jokes, which we've had since the dawn of time, and actually make them work. Say, I don't think this section is as strong as the previous section in any way, but
what are you giving them in return?
It still carries those elements of Doctor Who it's deconstructing.
So we're into episode 2 of it now.
Yeah, we've jumped across. And that was when they opened the doors, isn't it,
to the Daleks.
Yeah.
I do like the running I'll explain later gag, though, by the way.
Yes, indeed, yes.
I obey.
You may conquer the universe, but... I assume, is that Roy Skelton doing the Daleks there as well? Yes, it is.
The whispering Dalek is great.
That's... Bless him. You can almost feel
George,
that.
George! Jeffrey's gone out to the room.
There's like a sort of continuity to Rainbow where they are actually turned into Daleks after the last episode.
Oh, someone has got to make that.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised they didn't do it. It's just going to pop out there. Suppose it was the wrong channel. For those who don't know, Zippy and Rainbow was a puppet voiced by Roy Skelton on a children's television show called Rainbow. Which I was actually, to be honest, most Doctor Who fans across the globe will know that anyway. I like these little things, these little nods, these terrible, spool-wheeled machines. I mean, I suppose they were still part of props, weren't they, then?
Probably, yeah. And it recalls the 60s Dalek stuff as well, doesn't it? So
yes, it does. But I mean, it has an interesting attempt to sort of seriously homage bits of Doctor Who. I mean, even this gag here has got a certain amount of Doctor Who referencing to it. The Master suddenly having to realise that he might have to swap sides again.
Yeah.
The enemy of my enemy.
As soon as you twiddly hippie grief.
Yeah, but sometimes hard to stop from. I know you hear this in so many commentaries, they say it's hard to sort of not get into the actual story. Stop talking.
Right, yeah. I was actually paying attention to these styrofoam chairs too, which it's another thing that just kind of like harkens back to the classic show, you know, like the fact that. They thought nothing of using such cheap materials and not even disguising them, really.
Yeah.
You know?
I quite like the cushioned walls, actually.
It's quite interesting, that, isn't it? I've never seen really that sort of design in any of the shows.
Right, here we go. It's a regeneration.
Oh, yes, here we go. This is, again, the construction. Deconstruction of the regeneration.
He says, "I love you."
Oh, Doctor.
But yes, it's also. Do you think it's a? Do you think the comedy has aged at all? I mean, this is very much sort of 90s playing on sort of 80s comedy, isn't it?
I don't think it's. I think comedy in the last 10 years is aging a lot more than this has, to be honest with you.
So, what do you think of that regeneration effect?
It's not bad. It's okay. Seen worse, seen better on YouTube fan videos, but it's okay for the time. It looks impressive back in the day. Richard E. Grant as the Doctor.
Yeah, never heard of that.
No.
It's interesting how they made the clothes regenerate as well.
Yes.
They're also form fitting.
Use outfit. I know.
Nice tits.
And then it's quite interesting to see how these sort of seminal notions of who the Doctor should be in tabloid press, you know, how much has always been that it should be Rich D. Grant or Joanna Lumley. You know, these, you know, you actually get to see them for a moment, what they might bring if that was the situation. Of course, obviously, we've got Scream of Shackler, which gave us a better idea of what Rich D. Grant would do.
I think they're both good ideas, to be honest with you.
Or Joanna Lumley?
No, both Richard E. Grant versions. I think they're both a good approach.
Well, I personally prefer this, to be honest. As I think we said before, I find him a little too abrasive and heartily too constructed in Cornell's. Although I think Cornell does a good job in that play.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just don't feel that quite. It just almost feels almost like a parody in itself. I like that there. Even that kiss, there's a certain Rich D. Grantness about it. Yeah, you don't see many other actors do in his expression.
Oops, there's another one.
I like that shot of the Dalek turning its head.
You're my fiance, aren't you? Oh dear.
Seem to be a bit shy. Again, playing on the question of what regeneration can bring.
It's funny too, because you have Richard E. Grant, and now you have
Jim Broadbent.
Oh, God. Jim Broadbent. Oh, thank you. It just escaped me there. And they both played the Doctor before. Jim in another parody. And, of course, Richard, as you guys were just talking about, with Scream of Shaka. So it's interesting, like, how... And, of course, Richard had another character in Doctor... Did Jim Broadbent have another character in Doctor Who? For some reason, I feel like he did, and I just...
Not as yet, no. I'm sure it's only a matter of time.
I think also what's interesting there is that you have that interplay between Companion and Doctor sort of mirrors the... deep breath situation with Smith going to Capaldi, and how Coleman's companion wants him to return or be someone different. And they go another one who leads in the tabloid debates as, you know, the ultimate maybe Doctor: Hugh Grant, Lenny Henry, Joanna Lumley, or
Grant was offered it, wasn't it, before Eccleston?
Yeah, I was just gonna say too. Like, I don't know how you guys feel, but like knowing that he could have been the Ninth Doctor and watching him here, I actually found myself going, "Yeah, he's not bad." I wonder if that would have worked.
Yeah. I think he's, you know, he's obviously fallen into this trap of playing sort of swearing toffs. But, you know, when you give him a film that he has something doing, like About a Boy, he's really good in About a Boy. That's a really good performance, and I think he's a good actor. Just, you know,
he's a good actor. Many, no, absolutely. Gets typecast. Too powerful. I just think Eccleston was a very good one, as we've said before, in the sense that he was very much the antithesis of what McGann was. So, I mean, again, there's no reason why Hugh Grant couldn't have done that, but you kind of feel if they'd hired Hugh Grant, they'd have been going for something a little more of that middle class. That's what they'd have been looking for. Because that's what he's known for.
I think probably Hugh Grant would have been more prone to be discussed Doctor Who with a bit more levity than certain other actors as well.
You're too nice.
In interviews too brave, maybe too kind. May not have gone down too well long term.
You're like Father Christmas, the Wizard of Oz, Scooby Doo.
I mean, again, here we have a sort of meta commentary on what Doctor Who is to the people. And maybe a slight comment from the author about Doctor Who having to really be perpetuated. In an era when it really wasn't. Forward, I will renounce evil and follow the path of goodness to honor my. Who'd have thought that he'd have become the controller of Doctor Who? Save the Daleks! The Daleks too will honor their mortal enemy! Yeah, so. I mean, I must admit, while I love some of the jokes in the first part of this, and I like the idea of exploring different doctors as this does, and I love the production values for it. I actually prefer Dimensions in Time.
It's impossible.
For all its silliness.
Laws of the universe.
Which is an insult really to Stephen Moffat, because you know this has got far more work and intelligence and construction and thought on all levels, from author to production team. To say that feels rather bad.
Emma, look, I've got a Seric beam looking.
And here we have the precursor to what Moffat said he's always been happy to have.
Are you sure? I think I can see the odds.
Female doctor, no, Rob, doctor, we maybe breast.
You've come back to that's life some good eyesight time. To be able to see that on switch, though.
Really? I've always wanted to get my hands on one of these. Unfortunately,
but yeah, this is exactly. I mean, as I said, we were having a debate on the woman doctor issue and on Facebook. And I'm not This is exactly the reason I still think a lot of people are anti the idea, is that there's a fear that this is the sort of writing that would go into it.
Yeah. Well, if Moffat is in charge of the show when that eventually happens, this, you know, this is the fear of everyone, just simply because he's the head writer, and he can't let a sex joke go, basically.
Yes. Okay, Brian, which sonic screwdriver was that?
You know, it's funny, I was just sitting here trying to figure that one out. I don't know, because it looks like I had one kind of similar to that, which was just a very static, no moving parts whatsoever. But it looked a little different. That one looked like it was a little beefier, I guess, than the one I have.
Mm.
I don't know, it was on there too short to be able to tell.
It's a good ending as well.
It's a good punchline.
And it's a good mirror to maybe, again, what he sets up with his Doctor and Missy, isn't it? The other way round, but there's a lot of foreshadowing in Curse of Fatal Death to what he does in the actual show.
Unintentional, obviously.
Is it the show just an hour? Is this just not a blueprint for his time on the show?
Well, maybe it is, but he didn't know it at the time, did he? So that's why I said unintentional.
Or did he? Well, or did he? Or did he?
No, he didn't.
Or did he? Stephen Fry.
Yes. So.
Could it?
Yes.
Yes. Mine's moved on to.
Yes, not the red hat of Pat Ferrick, if you could.
No, my. Oh, you see. Yes, yes.
lovely, yeah. So that is The Curse of the Fatal Death, which. Or Curse of the Fatal Death, I do beg your pardon. It's one of those stories that tends to have several names, like Vampires in Venice, Vampires of Venice, Vampire of Venice, Vampire in Venice, whatever.
Yes, but you totally lose which story it was from those different variations.
Yeah.
So is there any background to this, Corley, or Terranova, that you can give me? Anything interesting about
the... Well, it was a Comic Relief charity thing, wasn't it? And it was shown over several hours, I think, rather than two nights, as with the Children in Need. Effort, Dimensions in Time, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, chronologically speaking, for the listener, that is. It was 1999, wasn't it, as well? So it was 3 years after the TV movie. It was sort of like March, April sort of time when it went out. And yet, you know, 4 years later, there was a new series in production, and, you know, aired 6 years later, and I always see it as part of a kind of a snowballing effect, you know, with, you know, you got Doctor Who magazine and you got the big finish, you got the novels and everything, and, you know, Doctor Who's return started quietly and then it kind of built up a momentum, and I always feel that this is part of that momentum.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's also, as I say, it gives you a sort of benchmark of where Doctor Who was sitting at the time. It wasn't being played, as you say, for the same sort of silly commentary that you get in the 80s with sort of various sketch shows, or even the use of Doctor Who to satire other social issues like Spike Milligan did with the Daleks. It was really very much one of those first serious deconstructions of what Doctor Who was in a way that was kind to Doctor Who. It was mocking it, but it was mocking it in a way or by someone who actually cared about it, which again was fairly unusual. So it was quite interesting to see where Doctor Who sat between 96 or 89 even, and 2005.
There was
certainly
a
move on from Dimension of Time. Sorry.
Yeah, there was an award that Doctor Who won around the same time. 50 years of Doctor Who, I think it was.
50 years.
No, it wasn't that. No, it was 60 years of the BBC or something like that. There was an award that Doctor Who got, and I think Peter Davison accepted it. And it was around this same sort of period. And again, I always feel that was, you know, part of that momentum.
Well, I think with 96 and the TV movie, I think there was always a momentum coming from that on the basis that it hadn't done badly in the UK.
Mm.
It obviously had issues over in the States, but UK-wise, the viewing figures were quite acceptable. So I think that will have reinvigorated the prospect of Doctor Who being something that could have future in it, but obviously taking that future on.
There was an award in 1996 for Best Popular Drama Series that was the Anti Awards, which was the culmination of the BBC's TV 60 series celebrating 60 years of the BBC.
Right.
All people involved in last years of the series were rewarded, including Peter Davison, Sylvester McCoy, who became the first actors to win an award for their role as the Doctor. But that was in 1996. Oh, wow. I thought it was a bit later than that.
I'm rather pleased that McCoy got an award for his role as the Doctor. I think that's rather cool, given that he still, from some interviews, feels a little like the black sheep, maybe.
Do you feel that still?
Well, I think he still gets a bit of that. Obviously, nothing like he used to get. And I think he's sort of, you know, he will still jokingly say he was the Doctor who killed Doctor Who. So he's obviously aware of that sort of discourse, but whether he believes it or not, I don't know. But I know I certainly don't think he did. And listening to some of the plays, I mean, he's so comfortable with that character now.
Yeah, there's precious few.
Really good.
There's precious few awards for Doctor Who, you know, prior to the new, the new Who era. There are a couple of nominations in 77 and 78 for Philip Hinchcliffe and Graham Williams. But they're only nominations. Then we jump forward. We've got that 1996 popular drama series I mentioned earlier.
What were the awards actually for on those for Hinchcliffe and Williams?
This was the
What was the category?
The category.
Because I mean that's the problem. It doesn't really sit.
It's
entertainment.
Harlequin Awards apparently for drama and light entertainment.
Right.
And that's it. What's the category? This is BAFTA, beg your pardon. So.
Because this is interesting. It's just today I was watching, I missed it when it came out. Stuart Lee's A Comedy Vehicle is now on BBC television.
Right.
And I was watching it on iPlayer. And he sort of satires the fact that Graham Norton would win the Best Comedy Award for his Graham Norton show over his own show. And the satire joke, which is insidiously placed in the clips with Chris Morris, is, of course, the award is actually for Best Comedy and Entertainment. It's not just for Best Comedy. Mm. But again, that was just sort of shows how these categories are in some ways so unfair, because, you know, the Graham Norton show and Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle are poles apart.
Yeah.
And yet are judged in a category which pulls them together. And it's the same Doctor Who. Is that Doctor Who was a show which, especially prior to its revisioning in 2005, didn't really have a category.
No.
And so how would it win an award? I can't see in a category where it could win an award.
Yeah. Royal Television Society Awards 1974. This will not surprise you. Best Graphics, Bernard Lodge.
Okay.
For the opening titles. There's another, the 1996 Saturn Awards, Best Single Genre Television Presentation.
Saturn Awards, right.
That won. And Best Actor on Television, McGann was nominated. I'm going to Wikipedia here, so there could be some holes in this information. But
it's not, that's not a classic show, is it?
No.
McGann.
Yeah. 1975, Writers Guild of Great Britain, Best Children's Drama Script. Nominees were Robert Holmes, Malcolm Hulk, Terry Nation, Brian Hales, and Robert Sloman, and they all won. I'm not sure how that wins, how that works really, but
they're the only ones, pretty much the only Doctor Who in the category. Then,
yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure how they've won there, or who won, but it just says nominees and then at the end result won. So presumably it's Robert Holmes who won. I don't know, but or Terry Nation, because I don't think the other three had scripts in 75. I might be wrong. But, that's it. There's very little in the way of nominations for Doctor Who in awards prior to 2005, which is strange, really. But at the same time, it's probably more illustrative of how the whole awards industry has kind of infected British culture and media.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, 15, 20 years ago, it wasn't really a thing here, was it? And now, you know, we just had the BAFTAs and that was it. And now we've got the BAFTAs, we've got, You've got TV magazines with awards. You've got the National Television Awards. You've got the Soap Awards.
But at the same time, it's still very hard. It's still a show, even now, that's still very hard to pigeonhole. I mean, obviously, you naturally pigeonhole in as science fiction, which has become a category that really didn't particularly exist in these sort of shows last century. This side of the ocean. So even now, I still think it's quite a hard show. And even if you do, you still have this whole issue of, you know, like Graham Norton, Stuart Lee, the awards are just hard to really pin down. I think the only way these awards really work is if you do what, and people don't like this, is if you were awarding for specific criteria that is a little more, that you can qualify a little more, like, for instance, writing, or as you say, special effects.
Yeah.
Where you can sort of say that is an outstanding piece of special effects, regardless of what the show is. It's sort of hard to sort of say, well, this whole show is, let's compare it to this other whole show. So, it's interesting. Let's
throw this open to our PBS friend. Does any of that surprise you about the awards, Brian?
That they were getting awards?
That they were barely getting any awards or barely getting any nominations prior to 2005.
Well, from what I know of the show over there, and the fact that, you know, there seems to still be people who think that the show was a children's show and not a family show, I'm not really surprised, unless you guys had awards specifically for children's show. Like, I believe that there are awards here for children's programs, right. And I think like Nickelodeon does those awards and so on. But, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, I would be surprised if that was such a thing, number one. So it really doesn't surprise me, because it just doesn't seem like the show was ever quite given the respect that it deserved, even by the people making it. I mean, that's terrible to say, because the people making it were pouring their heart and soul into it with what they could, with the budget that they had and the freedom that they were being given by the BBC. I should say the BBC wasn't giving it what it deserved, is probably the best way to say that. So I'm not surprised it wasn't really getting anything. I was actually more surprised to hear you say that it did actually win a couple of awards, because I just didn't even think that there were awards for shows like that at the time. You know, I just didn't think that was a thing. You know, now with Doctor Who being a drama in the prime slot, it makes sense that it would be winning awards, because, you know, it's not really, while it's still family viewing, it's you know, the flagship show. It was being made as a big drama replacement and not just that little children's TV show. You know, I mean, I guess I get that, but I don't know. The thing is, too, my understanding of it is coming from, I don't know how it all makes sense. Like, I don't know what awards you guys do, but I really don't watch awards shows either. So I don't really know what the norm or the standard is for them. I never really cared for awards shows what awards were won. You know, it's always nice to hear your show won one, but, you know, it's not something I ever needed my shows to do.
I just wonder whether popular television awards in the sort of 80s, 70s, 80s are a little more personality geared rather than shows. I'm just trying to think of television in that era, and I tend to remember sort of more sort of awards and shows that dealt with awarding to be about people rather than concepts. Like, I could imagine sort of Kenneth Williams getting an award more than Carry On getting an award. Do you know what I mean? I mean, obviously, you'd have shows which were solely about personality awards, like This Is Your Life, which would surprise some celebrity each week with an award as they're coming
Tom
off.
Including Tom Baker. Maybe we should do a commentary on that sometime.
So I mean, that was somewhere where they did actually get awards, I guess, but they weren't getting awards for Doctor Who per se. They were getting awards for being, so, you know.
Well, there was magazine awards, weren't there? There was, like, Looking Magazine. That had an awards thing, didn't it? And I think Swap Shop, back to Noel Edmonds, I think that had an awards as well. The Erics. They were called the Erics. I'm sure they were.
Oh, probably were.
Yeah, because the guy who lived in the ceiling. Yeah.
That was interesting, if that was a precursor for many of the awards. I'm just typing that into Google.
I may have dreamt that, to be honest with you.
Well, Google might be saying something similar at the moment.
What, that dreamt it?
Well, refuting the existence thereof.
I'm pretty sure there was the Eric Awards.
You're right. Someone's saying on a debate thread on a website I will not name because I'm not particularly keen on it. I seem to remember the Swap Shop Awards were called Eric's in his honour.
Yeah,
you're right. There you go. That's a bit of a reopening of memory there.
Yes, I've just opened that thread myself. I never watched Tiz Was, because it was on at the same time as Watchdog. The only time I don't think we had it here in the Northeast either, because a lot of stuff was crazily syndicated to particular regional networks on ITV in those days. And I'm pretty sure we didn't have it up here for whatever reason. But I do remember watching it once in my cousin's house in like 1980, 1981, and thinking it was the best thing I'd ever seen on a television, because it was just so anarchic, I suppose. And I was disappointed that I never got to see it ever again.
It was funny that, I mean, I know we're sort of going a little off
slightly,
thread,
yeah.
But I remember I used to love, and I still do, when I sort of find archives of old look-in magazines where they'd have the regional programs, and you'd get that frustration of being in the wrong region on the wrong, as you'd see other regions would have the shows that you wanted.
Yeah.
And yeah, you were stuck with Highway in the morning on Sundays while other ones had Stingray or something. It's like, I want to live over there.
Yeah. And you'd find strange things like Return of the Saints on a Sunday afternoon of all times.
Yes, but that would be in Anglia, but not in London weekend television, LWT. Because as those who don't understand, back before everything was a little more consolidated, ITV, independent television was regionalized, and it was regional areas which would run their own schedules.
I suspect this is an area that Gareth and I might touch upon it in our pilot podcast on talking about television.
You heard about this, Brian.
No,
he's ditching us. He does this one. He does this one podcast with Gareth alone, and suddenly we're ditched.
No one's ditching you.
We've been ditched. Someone had the temerity to actually say that it was a reasonable podcast. Obviously, presumably thinking it was going to be rubbish, and it was just that moment of relief that they decided they'd put on the Facebook. Thank God that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. little Mr. Northern Ego here thinks that he can run his own sort of sub podcast series with Kavanagh without us.
We're going to give it a go.
Yeah, well, hey. I think he's jealous of all the times we did do ones without him and kind of, you know, talked about him. But, you know, what's wrong with that?
Well, we'll just follow theirs. Every time they do a podcast, we'll just do a podcast on their podcast. And so we'll do a commentary
on our podcast. That would be fantastic. Yeah.
Of course, if you end up doing a commentary on our podcast, we're just doing commentary on yours. We're going to end up in a horrible recursive circle that we'll never get out of.
Yeah, unless we're the master.
Yes, absolutely.
Listen, I know we don't do recommendations anymore, but you may know this, it may have become apparent that I'm having a kind of a sort of a general Monty Python sort of revisitation, which is why I'm currently on the Michael Palin stuff. And I've been watching Ripping Yarns. And one of the episodes I've just watched was Golden Gordon, which is about a football fan who smashes his house up when his team lose. Done by Michael Palin, so obviously it's quite amusing when he does it rather than sort of disturbing. And I've discovered there's a nice link here, because there's a cameo by John Cleese. And I think this is a tip to any up and coming comedy writer, is if you can get John Cleese to do a cameo, get him to do a cameo, because there's that brilliant cameo by Cleese in City of Death, which is very, very funny, and it works in several ways. There's a cameo by Cleese in Golden Gordon. This was filmed in Skipton in North Yorkshire. It's a little old. Yeah, a mining town. And Gwen Taylor plays Gordon's wife. She runs off down the street, happy for once about the result of his local team. And she runs out after him into the front yard and shouts, "Gordon, I'm pregnant," or something like that. And there's someone walking down the street in front of her, and she shouts at her. And he turns round, and it's John Cleese. He doesn't say anything. He just looks round at her, looks down at her bump, looks up again, and then walks off. And it's possibly it's as funny as anything else that's in that episode. Which got me thinking, Cleese is just like, he doesn't have to say anything, you just put him in front of the camera and surprise people. Palin's book, the second volume of his diaries, Halfway to Hollywood, he goes out in 1983-84 for a meal with John Cleese. And they hatch a plan to wind up Palin's wife by having Cleese ring the doorbell. But isn't Mrs. Palin who answers the door, it's the bloke who's round doing the painting and decorating, and a apparently he nearly has some sort of near seizure at John Cleese being at the door when he opens it.
So, but we're not talking about young John Cleese.
Well, we're talking sort of Fish Called Wonder sort of era John Cleese, I suppose.
That's your limit. That's your max.
Possibly, I don't know. But Golden Gordon was about 1980-81, so Fawlty Towers up to Fish Called Wonder, perhaps. But yeah, whatever. So there you go. So I think that probably brings us nicely to the end of this week's Custer.
Hey!
Ka-ching! I think that probably brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K. I will be back next time. Look after yourselves. Until then, it's goodbye.
I like how we do recommendations, but only he does recommendations.
Yeah, Ben, I'm surprised it wasn't for his podcast.
I know, absolutely. I bet if Gareth was here, he'd have got a recommendation. He could do, Gareth Cavanagh, could you do us a recommendation, please?
We don't do recommendations anymore.
You just did one.
I didn't do a recommendation at all.
You recommended ripping yours.
We don't do recommendations anymore, but...